Welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Christopher Beale. This week, we remember a gay icon, both in music and fashion, Liberace.
You like this one? Yeah. It's one of my favorites. It's not the loudest outfit in my wardrobe, but it's the most expensive.
We'll take you inside Liberace's closet in about 10 minutes. Up first this week on Out in the Bay, a new story about dating apps.
4:30 p.m. is Match. 7:30 p.m. is Hinge. 10:30, 11 o'clock at night is Grindr.
This one is about Grindr. With about 13 million monthly users worldwide as of 2020, Grindr is the biggest gay dating app out there. Now, if you've never been on Grindr, it sort of looks like a grid of pictures. Some handsome faces, headless torsos. There's location data that's accurate down to the foot. And then if you hang out just long enough, you might get a message. Before I even open this, I know there's a high likelihood that this is an unsolicited dick pic. Ladies, you're not alone. Gay guys think this is okay too, but occasionally you start to click with someone. And then you start to think, hey, maybe this is going somewhere. If I asked you to describe Grindr to a straight person, how would you describe it?
Sex right now.
Really gay sex.
Really gay sex right now, yes. Well, the potential of really gay sex right now, but reality is 95% of the time it's not going to happen.
Mike Combs first downloaded Grindr many years ago when he was living in Chicago. He was still married to a woman deep in the closet. Out of curiosity, he downloaded Grindr one day.
And it showed up on their home screens as well.
Oh, no.
His family had one of those shared iCloud accounts.
I got a text from now my ex-wife saying, I got this Grindr thing on my phone. Do you know what that is? I didn't respond.
Wait, no, you can't leave it there. Did she not say anything else?
She didn't say anything else.
Oh, gosh.
Do you think that might have been her first clue that you were gay?
I don't know. It could have been.
Mike came out to his wife after that, and they promptly divorced. She stayed in Chicago, and Mike moved to San Francisco to begin living as an openly gay man. Mike downloaded Grindr again, this time without guilt, to see who was around.
I live a block from Polk Street.
This is where a few of San Francisco's gay bars are.
And, you know, my Grindr's on at night, and 10:30, 11, 12 o'clock, ding, 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 ding. People are like, hey, dude, what's up? What you doing tonight? Just these faceless one-post wonders.
It's important to understand that Mike's dating app habits sort of follow his moods and his schedule.
4:30 p.m. is Match. 7:30 p.m. is Hinge. 10:30, 11 o'clock at night is Grindr.
So you're saying that even you are tempted by the 10:30 boys on Polk Street?
Oh, yes. Why the fuck do I have Grindr on at 10:30 at night if I'm not?
One night, Mike chats with this guy named Goran.
He looked intriguing. He has chiseled features, prominent eyes, olive skin, excellent complexion, great hair, dazzling smile. So I said hi. And it was very chatty and flirty and not sexual and not raunchy. I mean, there were sexual tones there, and obviously we're both on Grindr, just playful banter back and forth. And I recognize that I want a partner. I want someone who I can rely on, I can trust, I can have fun with, but fundamentally of all this is respect. This chat that we had showed a level of respect between us. It just didn't go straight to sex. And that's what made him stand out mind you, it didn't take long till we had, till we hooked up. We met at the Tunnel Top Bar above the Stockton Tunnel. It was a warm September day, and he was, had shorts on, and he was very good looking, and it just took my breath away. Maybe pause to take him in.
After chatting for a couple of hours over a couple of rounds, the guys started walking.
He happens to live over in my neighborhood.
Then they reach that point that you reach on a first date where you have to sort of make a decision.
Either they're going to go and chat later or not. I said, you're out on a date with a charming, good-looking man. This is what you've wanted. Grab it. And so we're waiting at a red light, and I was like, you want to go make out? Which is very uncharacteristic for me. I'm never that forward. We came back to my apartment, and yeah, he did spend the night that night, so.
The guys continued to date for a few more weeks, and things were going really well. And they were taking sort of like a rare night off away from each other just to like unwind.
And I was in bed watching the news and getting ready to go to sleep.
Yeah, breaking news in San Francisco, crews battling a large building fire. This is happening in Knob Hill near Clay Street and Leavenworth. Video from Citizen App shows a flame shooting out of
that building. Police the phone rang and I looked at it and I saw it was Goran. He was very upset, and I could hear the stress in his voice, and he told me that he was standing on the corner and looking up and watching his apartment burn.
Area, no word on what got it started. We hear it's gone to two alarms now. Of course, we'll have an update on the morning.
And he was distraught and didn't know what to do and asked if he could come to my apartment that night. I think he came at around 1:30 or 2 in the morning. For all I know, he may have been laying in bed, just with his eyes wide open, horrified as to what had just gone on. He went back the next day to his apartment and packed up, you know, 3 or 4 garbage bags of stuff. And so I had an opportunity to look inside, and there's holes in the ceiling, and there's water dripping, and there's smoke and plaster and chips and board everywhere, and it's just a mess. Dating for a month, he drops in my apartment in a crisis situation, and you know, we're starting out this new relationship. We're trying to like figure out each other, and do we like each other or not? Do we have the same interests? And do all the normal relationship things that you normally do as you first start dating someone. But then you layer in on top of that what happens when you first move in with someone. And that's a very difficult thing to do because I do things my way, he does things his way. And one's not necessarily inherently better than the other. They're just different. And so we have to adapt and accept the differences, and you either choose to fight it or recognize that it just doesn't matter at the end of the day which side of the sink we put the sponge on. Stupid little shit like that, but that all it matters.
Since you two moved in together, have you consciously decided to continue that arrangement, or has it just continued organically?
It's been organic, and it's been challenged at some key moments where I really had to make the choice, and some of those have been like, well, why don't you just fucking move out then? Like, I'm not making you stay here. I didn't invite you here. You know, I didn't say no. Fate plopped him in my apartment on October 20th. Said, all right, there's Goran. What are you going to do?
So 5 months in, how is it going?
The past week has been particularly challenging. another one of those moments where I've asked the question, like, well, why are you living here if you're not happy? And the fight we got into. Thursday morning, I was in bed. He was there, and he put his arm around me, and I was happy he was there. I had a meeting that I knew was coming up that I should have gotten up and gotten showered for and shaved and put my contacts in, and I didn't move. I wanted to stay there. We had not resolved everything. We still haven't resolved everything. It felt safe. It felt good, and I didn't want to leave it.
What would you have said if I would have told you 6 months ago that you would have been a Grindr success story?
I would have said, you're crazy. I said, you're absolutely crazy.
But now you are, right?
But now I am. 6 months ago was a period where Grindr was off my phone, but there's something that draws you back.
What do you think that is?
It's human nature. Natural desire amongst humans to connect with other people emotionally and physically. And Grindr and the other apps are a vehicle to make that happen.
Mike says that you have to do the work on yourself in order for the apps to work for you. You have to be open to making a connection.
And put yourself in the mental space of being willing to accept in someone else. If you decide that that is something you want in your life and you open yourself up and be willing to take it, it will come, and you have to open your eyes to recognize when it's there.
And then you gotta work to keep it.
And you gotta work really hard to keep it. Yes, really hard.
Would you advise a new couple to move in together after a month?
No.
You're listening to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Christopher Beal. I made that story for my podcast, Stereotypes, straight talk from queer voices. That's available wherever you listen to podcasts or at stereotypespodcast.org. Special thanks to Mike and Gorin. Out in the Bay is a nonprofit production that's listener supported. We don't receive money from NPR or the stations that play Out in the Bay each week. We rely on listener support from people like you. If you like what you hear, please consider making a donation at outinthebay.org. Up next this week on Out in the Bay, we remember an icon who was queer before we even really had a word for that. I'm talking about Liberace. And we're going to pick up this 2009 episode of Out in the Bay with Eric Jansen looking at some of Liberace's legendary costumes with Tanya Combs, the director of the Liberace Museum.
Liberace actually was a child prodigy. He started playing piano at 4 years old. And of course, his parents quickly realized, gee, you know, this is real talent. They were a poor family, and they were able to get Florence Kelly, a well-known instructor in the West Allis, Milwaukee area, to listen to Liberace. And she agreed to teach him. And she said, I mean, in no time, he surpassed anything she could possibly teach him. Liberace was smart enough to know your average man is not crazy about classical music. So by combining classical with popular music, you know, he got your average man to listen to some classical as well. It's what the public liked.
And he had a lot of female fans. Let's not just say the average man.
No, that's exactly right. Well, you know, and it's funny because he really was like a matinee idol at the time. But his parents divorced very early on, and Liberace took care of the mother. And let me just say, since I'm a mom, I can tell you, you know, when you see that and you see a son that's so good to the mom, of course you're going to love him. And the ladies did. But he would joke in his, he'd say, well, it's just not old ladies out here.
Hollingsworth, the president of the Liberace Foundation for the Performing and Creative Arts.
You said you have a couple of favorites here.
I do. I'm a fan of purple. The one that we're standing immediately next to is one that Liberace wore in his final performances at Radio City Music Hall. A purple ostrich feather, variating from white to deep purple, and a costume that's just stunning underneath. And the fun thing about this is that he was flown in over the audience, and even at 67 years old, and unfortunately already very ill from HIV-related complications, said, "Mary Poppins, eat your heart out." So he still had a gift for flair, even at that late date in his performance career. Mm-hmm.
He finally did die of AIDS, but that was not on his first death certificate.
You know, it was a time in our history where nobody was diagnosed with AIDS because the words were not even fully formed in our culture or in our knowledge. The complications related to HIV, which is what the final death certificate even says, we know now to be there's different diagnoses associated with that. But when we think about 1987, when he passed away, unfortunately, there was not enough attention being given to the disease in any shape or form, and medical experts were not able to fully clarify exactly how he did pass away.
And he never acknowledged, nor did his family, as far as I'm aware, that he was gay.
Not publicly. He gave so much to his audience in performance, and so much joy and heart and life that really people just seem not to fixate on it like we sometimes fixate on celebrity private lives now. He had definitely an active social life, an active private life, but he really chose to keep himself professionally kind of above that and just deliver the show that he loved to give so much. Because when you look at these costumes, the one that weighs 200 pounds, he was performing off adrenaline, and the audience was giving him that, gay, straight, or otherwise.
What are these costumes valued at? Any idea?
Well, truly priceless now. Some of them, the black diamond mink that you see adjacent to this purple costume that I love so much, when it was built, it was about $750,000.
$750,000 for one? Mm-hmm. And this is how many years ago?
That one was built for him in 1974.
Liberace, I mean, he did things right. We have this gorgeous costume with over 40,000 hand-sewn Swarovski crystal rhinestones in the lining. The lining alone weighs over 125 pounds. Then you're adding fur, which, believe me, adds weight to this costume. But the reason I wanted to point this one out is because we have a car in our car gallery covered in the rhinestones, and we have a beautiful piano in our costume gallery that's also covered in the rhinestones. As I said, he did everything first class. Everything matched. It was a lot of fun. You know, his fans, they just loved it. I mean, yes, he was a fantastic pianist, but they loved costumes.
Oh, yes, yes. But you want to know something? I've done a couple of numbers, and I'm warm already. So, you know what I was thinking? Why don't I slip out and get into something more spectacular? What do you think? All right?
I see he's got at least one outfit here that he's got shorts. That must have been for when he was performing in Miami.
The hot pants, red, white, and blue hot pants. You know, one Halloween he dressed as a drum major. And so someone, they thought it was such fun, suggested, gee, why don't you wear hot pants? So his designer, Michael Travis, came up with this suit, and he wore it for the 100th anniversary of the Statue of Liberty. At Radio City Music Hall, he stepped out of a red, white, and blue Rolls Royce, which we have on hand in our car gallery, and he stepped out wearing these hot pants, and what a statement he made. Once again, everything done in fun, and you know, my favorite Liberace quote, "My clothes may look funny, but they're making me the money." Kind of says it all.
Did Liberace really start this, the Las Vegas glitz, or did it pre-exist?
You know, Liberace actually started it, and we will give him credit for that. Later, Elvis came to be. He came to the town, he saw Liberace's show, and believe it or not, he really wasn't such a big hit when he first came to town. Liberace was the big entertainer. I guess the colonel called and said, "Liberace, Elvis would like to see your show. We have a very famous picture where they've exchanged jackets," mm-hmm. and Liberace's wearing Elvis's plain striped coat. Elvis has on the sparkly. think he was trying to tell him something. Even back then, they remained very good friends. And later, think about it, Elvis came back to Las Vegas wearing the jumpsuit with all of the stones and the high collar and belt. So I think he was some inspiration for that.
You like this one? Yeah. It's one of my favorites. It's not the loudest outfit in my wardrobe, but it's the most expensive. Yeah. You know why? Because of the buttons. They're real diamond buttons. Yeah. In fact, the buttons cost more than the suit. But I couldn't come out just in the buttons. Coax me.
Remember what Liberace was wearing the first time you saw him?
Pink, hot pink. It was great. I never saw a man like that before in my life. I'm from South Dakota, you know, farming country, hillbilly country, mountain country, redneck, red state country. And he had a pink suit, pink cape, pink shoes to die for. And I said, that is a man. It takes a real man to wear something like that.
Will Collins is a Liberace tribute artist. Indeed, he's the only one with the legal right to use Liberace's moniker of Mr. Showmanship on stage.
How did you happen to start doing this?
Well, I started because I was working in a restaurant where everyone was a costume employee. And whatever I had on, people kept telling me, oh, gee, you look so much and you sound so much like Liberace. If I was a cowboy, an Indian, because back in the day, like in the 80s, village people were very big. And I liked my Indian costume the most. But no matter what I had on, people always said, you favor Liberace and you look like Liberace, you sound like Liberace. And I just happened to play the piano. And so then the first thing I did is I went to see him in concert. And then I could see what other people were seeing. Then the second thing I did after I moved to Las Vegas, because everybody said, you have to go to Vegas. And I did it, because I believe in pursuing a dream. I came here, people met me, they liked me, they had me meet him. I really became more interested, you know, and I started honing my craft. Unfortunately for our friend, Mr. Liberace, you know, he passed on, but then it opened the door for me.
Becoming a tribute artist to him helped you come to terms with your gayness, right?
It did. There was something a little psychological about that whole process, because I'm from a small town in South Dakota, and there's a lot to learn when you venture out and you go into bigger cities and you go to other places. And then we live in different times now, too. But what I learned from doing Liberace is that everyone was making, you know, their own connotations and their own evaluations and things about him and about his lifestyle and his personal lifestyle. I started paying attention, and then it helped me, kind of opened up the gates for me to come out myself.
Liberace actually had a home in Palm Springs, and the Cloisters, that is the home he passed away in, it was his main residence. And a lot of the things that you see in this bedroom exhibit were from that home. I do want to point out this beautiful crystal collection that you see. Remember I told you Liberace had three command performances for Queen Elizabeth, and he dined with her, and he actually fell in love with this particular crystal. It's Mosier crystal, and the pattern is called Splendid. You can actually go on their website and see this pattern. He owned one of the largest sets ever made. But Queen Elizabeth, when he dined with her, she was kind enough to give him two of the goblets. And we have those on display in one of the cases, and it hers, of course, in the center, there's the E for Elizabeth. Now, we featured hers on either side of Liberace's goblet, and we always get our guests to come and get as close as they can and try to say, well, do you see any difference in those goblets? So let me ask you, can you see anything that's different?
Well, right off the bat, I see there's a crown over the one that says L.
That's exactly right. She was the royalty, but he got the crown.
So which one's the real queen?
Would you like to hear my theme song?
Yes!
Okay. I beseech you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through. In that small cafe, the park across the way. Oh, I feel like the Pope. The children's carousel, the chestnut trees, the wishing well. Thank you. I'll be seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's warm and gay. I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon. But I'll be seeing you.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio from San Francisco. You can catch up on past episodes, get in touch, sign up for our email newsletter, and make a donation at outinthebay.org. Your donation helps us keep bringing queer air to your ears. Out in the Bay is a nonprofit, independent production, and that means we don't get any financial support from the radio stations that air Out in the Bay every week, nor from NPR, nor from podcast platforms. We rely on listener support. Thanks to Brad Payton and Richard Merck of Silicon Valley and Cornelia Enders and Bud Dylan of San Francisco for your generous support. Thanks also to KALW 91.7 FM in the San Francisco Bay Area and the San Francisco Public Press and its radio station KSFP 102.5 FM for broadcasting Out in the Bay weekly. Our email address is outinthebay@yahoo.com. Feel free to send us comments, questions, concerns. That's outinthebay@yahoo.com. Our executive producer is Eric Jansen. Our theme music was written and performed by Holly Mead. I produced this episode and engineered it. I'm Christopher Beal. Until next time, thanks for joining me out in the bay at outinthebay.org.